Sheffield Live, made in Sheffield, made by you.
Every Sunday morning at 9, join me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM. Each week we'll be exploring the wonderful world of modern jazz. From hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz, Sunday mornings at 9 on Sheffield Live.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what, I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You are listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
Hello, I'm Denise.
I'm Martin.
You're listening to The Film Show on Sheffield Live. Good afternoon. Welcome to The Film Show.
Oh, good afternoon.
Welcome back to both of us after a week off last week.
Yes, and your non-appearance last week.
Yes.
Yes. Crowds in their thousands were turned away outside the studio.
So many messages got in.
I did hear there was a vigil for you that took place last Saturday night.
Yes, I'm sorry.
And then people thought, no, it's too bloody cold. I'm not going there.
I couldn't be here last week, but I've carried over the playlist from last week. Some elements of that are in this week's playlist.
Oh, right. And of course, the world is eagerly awaiting your review of Wicked.
Yes, which the world has all seen now that wants to see it, let's be fair, yeah.
hang on a sec. I've just got to call up my itinerary. What are we talking about? All right,
Well, you've got curious. I'm curious, wary of starting with this because this never starts well when you mention the Orange Man.
The Orange Man, Mr. Mr. Donald J. Trump, your favourite president. He's made some inroads in making some comments about films where he wanted all Hollywood films to be made in America, he announced in the earlier in the year.
Yes, I remember this.
I'm not exactly sure whether that's been taken with a huge pinch of salt or whether any Hollywood studios are actually taking any notice of it. But the thing is, that's not how cinema works these days. Mm-hmm. If he still thinks there are five studios in and around Los Angeles, wake up. Anyway, he has...
Ooh, Wake Up Dead Man, we'll talk about that later.
He has in the UK. bent the ear of Paramount's head honcho, Larry Ellison, who is also a big donor.
He's a big donor.
And Trump has done some wheeling and dealing for him. And it was Trump that put pressure on him to sack Stephen Colbert earlier in the year. So it's all wheels within wheels. Anyway, Trump has floated the idea, or should I say strong-armed Ellison, into green-lighting Rush Hour 4.
the world has been waiting.
All of you, you can sleep soundly in your beds tonight knowing the fourth episode of Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker in the hilarious action comedy.
Perhaps he'll screen it in his big new ballroom.
Big new ballroom. But it's, I was looking at it, it's over 20 years since the previous one was made. Jackie Chan is now 71. Now, I don't know how many of these death-defying stunts he's going to be doing in it. Chris Tucker hasn't been in a movie in a leading role for well over 20 years. But this is one of Donald's favourite movies. That and Jean-Claude Van Damme movies. He's also been making overtures about getting JCVD.
I'm getting a lot of 80s vibes here, 80s Reagan vibes, yeah.
I mean, because Trump...
It'll give film academics something to teach people about.
There is something to actually dig deep, because Trump makes claim that his favourite film, is Citizen Kane.
Now, what? Has he actually seen it?
Well, there you have it in a nutshell. Can you imagine him sitting through 2 hours of an old black and white movie with no action, no explosions?
Where the rich guy dies alone and...
Exactly.
broken.
Stumbling about Xanadu, which, as you can now see, has alarming parallels with Mar-a-Lago.
Good Lord.
Doesn't it? I mean, in a way, it's a vision of his future, but I've never believed that he's actually watched it. But if you think about how his mind works, you know, what's the greatest film ever made? Oh, Citizen Kane. I'll like that one then.
But also, it's about a successful...
A rich, successful...
Without watching it,
without
you don't know what that means.
The real story is. So, yeah, I mean, this is only just saying it's maybe going into production, but there's the cultural landscape of Donald Trump there. Rush Hour 4. We've probably 5 to follow.
Oh, goodness.
And we've got... That's it. That's a thin gruel, isn't it, for the gossip this week?
Yeah, well, there's not much going on.
If we've had to lead with...
Flipping Orange Man.
I know, I'm sorry.
But we've got some sad things to catch up on, haven't we?
Yes, yeah. We've got a few. Have you got the bell ready?
I have got the bell ready. Hang on. You don't normally let me ring the bell for a bit of pressure.
What do you mean I don't let you ring the bell? The way you paint me is I'm sort of running some, you know... misogynistic, patriarchal...
I'll try and ring the bell properly.
Could you?
Yeah.
And could you get me a coffee, please?
Yes, darling, yes. Well, this is one that we were going to mention the other week, in fact,
yes,
weren't we?
Yes, and we've got circumvented. Sally Kirkland, who may not be an instantly recognisable name to you, but... she passed away, I think it was just over 2 weeks ago, at the age of 84. And as I say, she not maybe immediately well known. You would probably recognise her if you saw a picture of her, certainly when she was in her prime during the 80s and 90s. But she had this incredibly long career, starting off as part of Andy Warhol's factory. She'd been a go-go dancer, first of all, then moved into Warhol's circle of superstars at the factory. She was in a number of avant-garde theatre and film productions. There's one called Coming Apart, which I have a copy of somewhere.
Oh, yeah, you were going to lend that to me.
But it's been like, I've been like Gene Hackman.
I can't remember which wing it's in.
I've been like Gene Hackman in The Conversation, you know? And I still can't find it. And there's something else that I'd never heard of. She was nominated an Academy Award in 1988, I think there was, for Best Actress for a film called Anna, which was an independent movie. And there weren't many of them that would get that sort of profile back then. And I must say, I've never heard of this film. It's completely slipped me by in every way possible. And you know me.
You know all the weird there's some little obscure
tributaries.
There's some crescents you go down there. Yeah.
Never heard of it. That was a critic, and I think she won a Golden Globe. She actually won the Golden Globe.
Yes, and she was for also, a performance. She was also like a TV director and producer as well.
Well,
she?
Yes, because then a lot of her work then moved to tell. It looks like she was in almost every television show that was ever on. She was a guest star in it, and she also made loads and loads of straight to video or straight to DVD. Movies in the night. Now, I did find one of them, one called Double Threat. I was going to bring it in, but you'd only throw it at me. But some of these straight-to-DVD things are brilliant, and this one is, like, particularly bad. But you can't stop watching it. Mm. She did end up contracting dementia, and so her last years of her life were in nursing homes where she was being cared for. But I think the story of her life is a fascinating story and would make a great movie.
In itself, yeah. But she also appeared in some other sort of larger films in a supporting capacity, like The Sting and
JFK. I don't remember her in JFK. Mm.
I bet it was a tiny...
I'm saying she wasn't, but, you know, these might just be in... one scene, it might be a line or two of dialogue. They left me on the cutting room floor, sort of thing. Yeah.
I read one obituary, though, that said, like, her legacy is of bold artistry, perseverance and commitment to craft over celebrity, which sort of translates as she didn't get any big roles, but she was great.
Yeah. She would liven up any film she was in for the short time that she might be in it. She's well worth looking out for. Right.
Talking of liven things up. An absolute giant of the reggae world, Jimmy Cliff, left us this week. Most known as a reggae performer, but really in the film world, the huge success of The Harder They Come, 1972, was one of the first like successful Jamaican exports of filmmaking. And it was a really gritty crime drama, but Jimmy Cliff was the lead actor in it, and it sort of echoed some things in his own life of his own like journey going to Kingston and making it as an artist. And in the film, it's a long time since I've seen the film, but he's really exploited by a producer and he ends up going into a life of crime instead of
he's wrapped up with the Kingston music
and he becomes this kind of folk hero, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Escaping from the law.
You say
corrupt police.
I think it was the first, certainly the first Jamaican film to get anything like an international release. And I think you could say almost started the Jamaican film industry, which is still relatively small now.
Yeah.
But he began it, and the director, Perry Henzel, they were shooting this for nearly 2 years because they just couldn't get any money for it. And I'm pretty sure, you know, Jimmy Cliff would put money in from a successful single and they'd shoot for a few more weeks. And it's still a rough and ready movie when you watch it. It's, I think it said like a 4K upgrade, but it's still, you know, it's still rough around the edges. And the dialogue is in that Jamaican patois that, although it's English, it's a form of English that still requires subtitles.
Yeah, unless, it's like when it's a bit like Shakespeare. Yeah. You need to get your ear in if it's not your first.
You've got to get the rhythm of the speech, let alone the words that are being used. And it became successful. It was a huge hit in Jamaica, wasn't it?
But it was globally as well, such a massive international success. Yeah. And it's sort of credited with, it made Jamaican music, especially reggae, popular all around the world. I mean, reggae was coming. There's a lot of hyperbole about that, but I don't think it had such, it hadn't had such an international set. But also, an audience being able to watch it in its own cultural context. In Jamaica,
It spread to Western audiences very much through midnight movie screenings, and that's where it built up a huge cult following. I mean the film. I say we talk about reggae not being popular. You know, there was a few reggae hits.
That's what I mean. It was already
Before this was, because you know we had an Afro-Caribbean population here who had come from the Indies.
Yeah, and I think was Jamaica like independent from like 1961, 1962. So this is 10 years into their independence.
Yeah,
and like 20 years of migration to England had already happened.
Yeah. So, you know, communities in certain parts of the country where they don't even had their own cinemas, you know, to cater specifically for that audience. So,
but I guess it was still an international launchpad for all of this. I mean, because it's such an amazing soundtrack, the film. Because it's not just, you can get If You Really Want, Harder They Come,
Draw Your Bricks.
You've got Toots and the Mayhills on there as well. Shantytown. We should do another week. It's just this, because we are going to play. Let's play a track of that, and then we'll come back for our final.
Good move.
Let's play the title track from Harder They Come. Slave. remembering Jimmy Cliff there, who has died this week, specifically in his film Harder They Come.
There you go. The bell, please, my dear.
Oh, dear.
Last one for this week. The great, the magnificent, the I've been in almost every film made genius of Udo Kier. I was thinking, here, why being...
Udo?
Udo. Udo Kier, German actor who has been in over 250 films and for the past 50-odd years has turned up in anything and everything you could ever imagine. He's probably the thing he was most famous for initially was being in Andy Warhol's Flesh for Frankenstein and Blood for Dracula. Two films from the early 70s. And if you look at him back, he was gorgeous.
Hot stuff.
He is. He was gay, so you have to temper your. But what beautiful
what
man.
Difference? What difference does
what
it make to me?
You know? And I think he still looked great. As he looked better as he got older, you know. But apparently, he was sat on a plane next to Paul Morrissey, who was planning these films with Warhol, and they got talking. He said, "Oh, I'm an actor," and Morrissey said, "Oh, give me your phone number." And 2 or 3 months later, Morrissey rang him up and said, I'm just starting this film in Italy. Would you like to come over and be in it? And he said, well, what do you want me to do? He says, I want you to be Frankenstein. And that, he just gave him the lead role. And these films are very famous. They were incredibly bloody. From that, he started working all over. He worked with Fassbender in a number of his movies. The Third Generation is really good. He's great in that. And so he would just turn up in all of this stuff where you would least suspect him. And then Gus Van Sant got to know him. And Van Sant got him a work permit to come over to the States. And he featured him in My Own Private Idaho, which has a great scene where he does this dance with a lamp.
See, I have seen it. But it was in the 90s.
What, you want to drug out and drug
I remember
drenched.
It, yeah.
Since then, he met Lars von Trier, and von Trier has had him in about 6 or 7 of his films in his television series. And sometimes it could be like a big role, or sometimes, you know, he could just come in for one scene. And that's it. He owns that film after that. I was saying to you before we came out, I went to the Toronto Film Festival in 2017. I think he was in 3 different films that were on. And like, he turned up at 2 of the Q&A things. And I think one of them was Alexander Payne's Downsizing. And these are some of these are big Hollywood movies. Some of them are, you know, 10 bob, 2 and 6 movies made independently. But he's always, you know, he always takes it seriously, it seems, no matter what he's in. And he's electrifying to watch. Once he's on, you can't take your eyes off him.
Oh, he's got such striking eyes, talking about
amazing.
Eyes.
Amazing.
Yeah,
his
really
eyes
piercing.
Are just incredible.
Yeah.
And I think there's still a film of his that's in the can but hasn't come out yet. So I'll give that a big word up when that finally hits the screens. But I was really sad about this because, as I say, he could cheer up the worst of films for you.
I was going to say, it sounds like a constant, maybe he'll be in this.
Yeah. And I remember...
Playing Udo spotting.
Maybe Udo will be in this one. Oh, he is. So, three quite sad ones. Yeah, I was ready to see them all go. Oh. Yeah.
We've got some trailer trash.
Well, make this quick. Have you watched any of them yet?
I have, yeah. Well, I've got a very 70s vibe from the first one. But I'm not quite sure what's going on, having never seen any of the Hunger Games. I've not seen a single Hunger Games film.
I've seen one, and I can't remember which one it was. But is this not a terrible title? Hunger Games, Sunrise on the Reaping.
Do you know what it's handy for? It's handy for film quizzes. when you want to ask, which Hunger Games film is this? We need the correct full title because nobody knows. It's like when they ask Terminator questions.
That's almost as bad as Quantum of Solace, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which I've still... What does that mean? I did notice that Jesse Plemons was in it, but we...
We can't establish from the trailer if he's good Jesse or bad Jesse. No.
We'll have to leave that one there for... Yeah.
But you were saying that's not... It's not out till next November.
That is in November. And I've noticed this with some of these big movies. They're advertising them a year in advance. And that new Christopher Nolan one.
Mm.
There's been adverts for that for the past few months. Teaser ones, let's say. Because I think when the first one came out, they hadn't shot any of it yet. You know, it was just some Greeks on a boat sort of thing. And maybe this will tie into what we're going to talk about after the next piece of music.
Well, the other trailer looks quite intriguing.
I thought that too.
Yeah, and it's our friend...
Is it Kristen or Kirsten?
It's Kristen.
I'm going to be drummed Kirsten out of the Dunst, broadcast.
Kristen. But the Quality of Water, this looks interesting.
I thought that, yeah.
It's our Imogen Poots.
Very old, Imogen Poots.
And I saw, she was in, I can't remember the name of the film I saw her in earlier this year that was a bit middling, but I remember thinking, oh, I want to see her in something else.
Have you not watched Green Room?
This could be the one. No.
She's in Green Room.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's bloody good in that.
Yeah.
She can handle a weapon well in that.
But The Chronology of Water, do we know when that's coming out? Is it next year sometime?
I think.
Must be, there's nothing else coming out now,
I think it's early-ish next year, so maybe late winter, spring. But we were talking, again, earlier on, I thought, I'm really interested in the stuff that she does.
Yeah, well, it's written and directed by Kristen Stewart and co-producing. I find, we were talking as well, the interesting pattern that both her and Robert Pattinson's...
It's amazing, isn't it? You know, you would never have thought that, would you? And they've sort of built this new career. I'm sure they're building up to do like a Twilight reunion in a few years' time.
We should probably mention what the premise of the film is, shouldn't we? Yeah. Imogen Poots plays a young woman who there seems to be swimming involved.
It's very liquid, isn't it? The trailer, So maybe we should just leave it at that.
But it looks intriguing. We like the look of that.
Yeah.
Shall we? Well, we mentioned Robert Pattinson. I am going to play something from our playlist now for this week, and Lynn Ramsey's done all the work for the playlist because it's all songs from To Die My Love.
She don't like her eggs all runny. She thinks crossing her legs is funny. She looks down her nose at money. She gets it on like the Easter Bunny. She's my baby, I'm her honey. I'm never gonna let her go.
He ain't got laid in a month of Sundays. I caught him once and he was sniffing my undies. He ain't too sharp, but he gets things done. Drinks his beer like it's oxygen. But he's my baby and I'm his honey. Never gonna let him go.
In spite of ourselves, we'll end up sitting on a rainbow. Against all odds, honey, we're the big door prize. We're gonna spike our noses right off of our faces. There won't be nothing but big old hearts dancing in our eyes. She thinks all my jokes are corny.
convict movies and make her horny. She likes ketchup on her scrambled eggs. Swears like a sailor when she shaves her legs. She takes a licking and keeps on ticking. I'm never gonna let her go.
He's got more balls than a big brass monkey. He's a whacked out weirdo and a love bug junkie. Sly as a fox, crazy as a loon. Payday comes and he's a howling at the moon. But he's my baby, I don't mean maybe. I'm never gonna let him go.
In spite of ourselves, we'll end up sitting on a rainbow. Against all odds, honey, we're the big door prize. We're gonna spike our noses right off of our faces. There won't be nothing but big old hearts dancing in our eyes. In spite of ourselves, we'll end up a-sitting on a rainbow. Against all odds, honey, we're the big door prize. We're gonna spike our noses right off of our faces. There won't be nothing but big old hearts dancing in our eyes. There won't be nothing but big old hearts dancing in our eyes. In spite of ourselves.
Well,
John Prine and
you're
Iris
Dement. You're listening to Sheffield Live.
In spite of ourselves. I caught it one day, it's sniffing my undies.
Yeah. Put them away, Denise.
Absolutely.
Put them away. It's laundry day next week.
Love that tune.
There you go.
Features in Lynn Ramsey's To Die My Love, which is still out in the cinema. Please go and see
just.
It. Please go and see it. If you can find a screen that Wicked for Good isn't
shown.
On.
There's been some news out today that October 2025 has been Hollywood's worst year for box office since, well, for almost 30 years.
And is this in terms of money at the box office before anything else, before any like profit or losses for films? Is it like in terms of what we're spending?
Yes, yeah. It would seem to be. Yeah,
wow,
and there are some
news,
films are specifically dying at the box office. And some of those being big money movies that they've spent a fortune on. But I mean, we were saying, weren't we, not long ago, it's not been a great year. I mean, I'm looking back now on 2025 and I don't feel there's loads and loads of films that I've really enjoyed. And
big budget wise,
big budget wise. But even sort of middling wise,
well, we both liked One Battle After Another, didn't we?
Yeah.
But we were both said at the time, "How is this ever going to make its money back? Because it's cost an absolute fortune,
And it's not going to." I think. But above and beyond that, it's like, I mean, can anyone even remember anything about this year's Mission Impossible film?
I was going to say there was a big Mission Impossible, but I don't think it...
I can't remember anything about it right now.
I didn't even see it.
There you go.
But the thing is about Mission Impossible for me, I watched the first one when it came out, and then I didn't watch any others, and then I caught up on all the others over the last, like, year or so. And it made... throughout my letterbox thing, made me think I was a Tom Cruise fan, which I am not. But I had no appetite for seeing this latest film, and I kept saying, "Well, I want to see it in the cinema for the special effects." Yeah. Never go and see a film because of the special effects. You should have learned in 1997 with Titanic. Don't go and see a film because people tell you about the special effects.
And that's it. Hollywood is pumping out these massively budgeted, and we're talking about 200 million. Not being out of the ordinary anymore. Mm. And that's just the production costs. And for a film to make back or to go into profit, it needs to make twice its production costs.
I suppose maybe like the big film industry set itself into a corner with the whole Marvel success.
Yep.
And those big budget films, and that's sort of dying now. And they're not.
They are
getting,
not making it. And
the Fantastic Four this year.
Who cares?
Didn't make didn't make much money or impact.
Of course, I'm looking back on that Superman film. I think.
Well, but that is that was successful in terms of it did better at the box office than I think a lot of people thought.
But I don't think it did as well as what they were hoping it would. And I think the next one they've got coming out is a Supergirl movie.
Yeah, and no, I've never done. Yeah,
and Supergirl's like a curse.
Yeah,
it never does well.
What was her name? Helen
Slater, wasn't it? Yeah. Whether it be films, whether it be TV shows, it never really works.
But they're still going with it.
I know.
Like,
well, it's like.
Because I think Superman is in the top 10 grossing films of this year, but it's just it can't make the money back because of that target.
And there we have the thing: you can make a lot. You make $500 million on a film, but if it's cost $200 million to make and you've spent $150 to $200 million promoting and distributing it, you haven't got a lot with that $100 million. And so the economics of it are mad. And as you were saying just there, they keep on doing this. It's almost as though they're like gambling addicts.
Mm, yeah. This
is going to be the one. This is going to be the big one. Here, here's my shirt. How much for this shirt? And you know, the thing that they're trying to advertise Hunger Games for November next year already means they're trying to sort of hedge in this audience as much as they can. And the whole economic model has been thrown up in the air in the past 15 years. There's the whole streaming side of things. There's the collapse of the home video / DVD / Blu-ray market, which was a huge. That was cushioning the Hollywood studios from box office figures. Now, as we've said many times, it's for niche collectors more than anything else. Fewer and fewer films. Like the run-of-the-mill Hollywood movies are even going to be being released on DVD and Blu-ray now.
And I suppose the streaming model in general. So Netflix, there's no incentive for an audience to go and see something necessarily at the cinema if they know it's going to be on in 2 weeks'
and
time on the
only two
on
weeks.
Streaming. Yeah.
And I sort of think to myself, oh, I shouldn't be like that. But other times I think, I can't be bothered paying that amount of money. I mean, have you seen how much money Cineworld asks for a ticket? It's 15 quid. Goodness. Are you out of your mind?
But I do the light model of I pay them and I go and see whatever I like at the light. Yeah. And then a few things at the showroom as well.
And look at you're brain addled. You're broken. You've seen so many bad films this year.
Oh, no, but what the great film I saw this year that did great box office as well was Sinners.
Yes.
The beginning of
and
the year.
There have been a couple of films that have broken. Mm. And there have been more of those medium budgeted films. And I think Sinners is definitely. And Weapons, which was something that almost came out of the blue, you know.
But Weapons didn't have long in the cinema and then it was streaming quickly after. Yeah. And it's just sort of snuck underneath
and
the radar.
And I just don't think that model is working very well. You know, you've got to give something a bit of life in cinemas now to get that buzz. But I think the other problem is that's adding to all this is people don't want to take a chance on going to see a film in a theatre. They're obsessed with looking to see what its Rotten Tomatoes rating might be. And I think, why on earth would you look at that and make a choice about going to see a film on something like that? It boggles my mind, you know. If you've got an actor or a director that you're like, can't see it. Now, take a chance on something.
What else have we had this year as well? Those big budget things like Jurassic Park. There was a Jurassic Park one, I didn't even see it.
The Jurassic Park,
bring myself. And the recent Running Man, no thanks.
Well, my brother had been to see it and I was talking to him last weekend and he said, like, the original is about hour and 10 minutes at most. This is 2.5 hours.
Good Lord.
How can you... He said, at the end of it, just went on and on, and to the point where it made no sense to me. Now, my nephew, who loves an action movie, he even refused to go and see it. Now, that means it's getting bad vibes if he doesn't want to go and see it. And again, why? Who was asking for a remake of The Running Man?
Or Tron Arse.
Tron Arse. Is that going to be the last time we're going to be able to say that this year?
Yes. Maybe I might have to go straw line.
Well, when we have our end-of-year roundup, I might be able to say Tron Arse again then, mightn't I? But I'm leaving it for today.
Oh, dear. It's depressing, though, isn't it, for the future?
It is. And, moving on, as half the cinemas in Sheffield are showing Wicked for Good from this weekend, which I think is ridiculous. Yeah, people want to go and see.
Yeah, but you can't. We were saying you can't. If you want to see, I wanted to see Blue Moon or Pillion, and I wanted to catch them this afternoon. I can't get. There's no afternoon screening of them. I've got to wait till tonight when I can't go.
Yeah, yeah.
Jeez. Should we play a song?
Oh God, we better go. Sorry, yeah.
Let's have a song. Clapping song. Love that song. Do you remember the 80s cover version by the Bell Stars? That was Shirley Ellis.
Yes.
But it was a big thing in the 80s as well with the Bell Stars.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always wondered,
thing,
why was the auntie buying the girl a rubber dolly? Why was she in trouble with the soldier if they kissed? Surely that's not the little girl's fault. If she's young enough to want a rubber dolly, why is...
You're so innocent then, weren't you,
I was so troubled by
you're
that,
so
yeah.
Naive.
But I was worried that the little girl was in trouble when the soldier... soldier was the one that was doing the wrong thing anyway. The clapping song, which well, also features in Today, My Love. We've got some reviews.
Thank God.
Well, I'll do a brief one for Wicked for Good. Cause,
please.
Shall I? Because it's, yeah. we, you know.
It is what it is.
It is. It's a year's a long time to wait for the second half of two.
I could films. Have waited longer.
Yeah, I bet you could. So my summary is, it's as enjoyable as the first one, almost. But it hasn't got the big song, Defying Gravity, in it. It has got some good numbers. It's a bit darker, but unlike the first film, there's a bit more Glinda than Elphaba in this. So there's a lot more Ariana Grande than there is Cynthia Erivo. And I preferred the Cynthia Erivo bits, I suppose. It's all right. You're going to go and see it if you've seen the first one and you like it. You're not going to bother if you haven't. That's all I can say.
And the only update I've got is that because of all the ribbing I was getting, I did watch The Wizard of Oz a year ago.
You resent it greatly.
And I hated it. So I was right all along. Thank you.
But I had a much... I did enjoy it, but I just didn't love it, you know. I had a much better time last night at the cinema with... Now, Knives Out, Dead Man. Yeah, except it's not called that. It's called Wake Up, Dead Man, A Knives Out Mystery. It's the third in... So another sequel, but the third in the Knives Out franchise. I quite enjoyed it, you know. The first, like, half... I don't think Daniel Craig turns up until half an hour. And then I was like, oh, yeah, Daniel Craig's in this. He's Benoit Blanc again. He's got his... he's got a little bit more of a... He's gorgeous. I've loved Daniel Craig for 30 years.
He's got a different haircut in this one, hasn't he? I've
been
in
love with him for 30 years. He looks like a little... he's got like a little silver beard in this. And he looks lovely in his 70s style suits. But really sort of the lead, if you like, in this is our... what's his name now? Joss O'Connor, who plays like a priest who's sent to... it's very Agatha Christie. He's sent to an old style church in America, which is obviously not as old as as it's meant to be. And there's a corrupt priest there who is the delightful Josh Brolin as a bad priest, and supporting cast of suspects with Glenn Close, Jeremy Renner, Andrew Scott. Mila Kunis turns up as the local copper. I had a great time with it. It was great. Nice pace, nice fun, and genuinely wasn't entirely sure who it could be because it could have been any of them.
I mean, I saw the first one. I mean, I quite enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it much more than the second one.
I couldn't make my way through the second one. That annoyed me. So this is going to be on telly in a few weeks' time. Isn't it?
It will be, and it'll be one of those lovely Sunday afternoon things.
Yeah. So I'll probably catch up because I like the cast. In this one.
They make it very enjoyable. Oh, Thomas Hayden Church turns up as well. And, you know, they're all obviously very good at what they do. So it makes it more enjoyable for you as a viewer. So, yeah, the new Knives Out gets a thumbs up from me.
Excellent. And to end on yet another sequel, Sisu 2, Road to Revenge. Yes, it's your favourite Finnish commando... Artami, he's back this time, but he's not killing Nazis this time.
Oh,
he's got the Red Army in his sights, and he takes half of it down in this. It's the heartwarming story of him dismantling his family's home in a piece of occupied Finland to bring back to part of Finland that isn't occupied by the Soviets. His wife and children have been massacred by the Red Guard, so he's got vengeance on his mind. And through the course of the film, he moves from a pickaxe to a nuclear weapon in getting that vengeance from them. It's an hour and a half.
Oh, that's
there is 5 minutes exposition, and then it's total mayhem. For the rest of the film, using every form of transport they can sensibly, and sometimes not quite as sensibly, get in. It does exactly what it says on the box. I think, when they were doing Barbenheimer, I think they should do Sisu 2
Wicked for Good
as a double bill.
For Sisu.
But if you want to see some simple, in-your-face, no-holds-barred violence, and some of it is brilliantly done. You know what? It cost $12 million to make this, and it looks fantastic. And it's worth an hour and a half of anybody's time.
Especially if you like a bit of fisticuffs.
There's a bit of fisticuffs, but with all the other stuff going on. And it's very inventive with how they kill people. It's very inventive. That's me. I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Great.
Two thumbs up.
Great. We've had a nice week at the pictures, though. Ain't much coming up.
It won't be much for a while now.
Oh, shall we play another song?
Please.
This is another song from Dymo Love. This is Palladium.
Le Palladium, c'est la nouvelle voix, et tout varie en bas, car le tchèque, le chèque, mon caisse. Danser ce qu'on veut, allez au Palladium, y'a rien de mieux. C'est là-bas que chaque soir on va rentrer tous les copains pour prier, danser, chahuter, taper des pics, claquer des mains, yeah, 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 yeah. Et quand ils entendent de la musique qui commence, ils ne se font jamais prier pour entrer dans la danse, oh yeah, 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 yeah. Mais comment vous dire, mais comment vous expliquer, allez au Palladium et vous verrez. Danser ce qu'on veut, allez au Palladium, y'a rien de mieux.
Is one Liz Brady getting very excited about a dance club in Paris called Palladium.
Liz Brady, that's not a very French name.
Liz Brady?
Liz Brady.
Liz Brady.
Brady.
Oh, love that tune. I want to go to that club. Great. What have we got coming out this week? Well, okay, still out on release that we want to try and catch. There's Pillion, the sexy Harry Lytton film with Alexander Skarsgård and Harry Melling.
Alexander Skarsgård in South London.
Oh, it looks really good.
It does, yeah. Actually, yeah.
And Blue Moon, I'm intrigued by this. This is Ethan Hawke starring as Lorenz Hart, sort of being bitter and upset about his old writing partner, who's played by Andrew Scott, his success with Oklahoma. He's playing Richard Rodgers, yeah. Rodgers and Hammerstein.
It's a Richard Linklater film, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's also what's interesting to me about is how tall is Ethan Hawke in real life? Because he's playing someone shorter.
When I was on the train with him that time.
Yeah, when you're on the train with him.
When I was on the Eurostar with him, I towered above him.
He's not that short, though, is he?
He's short enough.
Because in the trailer, it was quite distracting because I was looking, I was like, wait, is he on his knees? What's going on? So as long as I can get over that, I'm going to be intrigued by this.
Alan Ladd, he used to have to put his female stars in a ditch when I was standing next to him. He was so short.
What else is out? Oh, gosh. There's not much coming, but there are some one-off screenings.
Go on, then.
Well, The Light's got their Stephen King month carrying on, so we've got a bit of carry there. But the showroom has got Cinemas Palestino, the voice of her... I can't say it, Hirij Rijab preview coming up on One Night this week on Wednesday. But tomorrow they've got a quite intriguing double bill. I can take or leave the first bit, which is Phantom of the Opera with a live score, but they're pairing it with Phantom of the Paradise. Now
that's a great movie.
That is a mad film.
Brian De Palma's, might be his only musical, I think, but it's amazing. It was like a 70s musical.
It's a rock opera, yeah. Would you say?
Yes, yeah, so I suppose you could, yeah.
But it's a little bit
weird. It's weird, yeah. It's weird.
A great central performance of the, what's his name now? I'm going to put you on the spot now. Paul Williams as Swan in it.
Yes, and he wrote the score, didn't he? He writes all the actual songs in it as well.
That's one not to be missed, I think, if you're free on Sunday.
No, it's a great film, and if you've never seen it, you won't quite believe what's going on. What?
The new release on Friday, I'm not sure we're going to make it. It's Eternity. It looks like a love triangle in the afterlife.
I don't think I'm going to go to the pictures.
With Elizabeth Olsen, Miles Teller and Callum Turner.
I'm not going to see any of those films that I've listed there, because they all look very offensive to me.
Shall we leave you with the last tune? This is The Beast in Me from Nick Lowe. We will see you next week. Back with a film show.
Enjoy your films.
Enjoy your films.
The beast in me is caged by frail and fragile bars. Restless by day and by night, rants and rages at the stars. God help the beast in me. The beast in me has had to learn to live with pain and how to shelter from the rain. And in the twinkling of an eye, might have to be restrained. God help the beast in me. Sometimes it tries to kid me that it's just a teddy bear, or even somehow managed to vanish in the air. Then that is when I must beware of the beast in me, that everybody knows. They've seen him out dressed in my clothes, patently unclear if it's New York or New Year. God help the beast in me. The beast in me.